Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board. I have a saying. Actually, it's not my saying. I took it off the great Andrew Breitbart when he sat there and said, politics is downstream of culture. And that includes sports culture. I don't always talk about politics and sports. Sometimes it's just sports, but this week, holy mackerel. It's like politics and sports where y'all remember those Reese's, the chocolate and peanut butter commercials where they collide? And he goes, your peanut butter's in my chocolate. No, your chocolate's in my peanut butter. And boom, the Reese's cup came into being. That's how I feel about politics and sports. You know, what were monumental events like Jackie Robinson have become daily ignorance on the opposite spectrum, where we made great strides and broke great barriers with Jackie Robinson. We've taken 100 steps back with, as a Latino, I say this confidently, with minorities abusing the fact that we are minorities. Now, I may not look minority, but my grandmother, she would have been mistaken. Well, not mistaken. She would have been seen for being a black woman, as she was. And I have black relatives, and I have white relatives, and I got the Spaniard gene in me. But race has become very important to me, because until we come together as Americans, we will never unite as a country. When we are Latinos first, black first, Asian first, white first, whatever first, Native American first, we're not Americans first. And that is how a country is destroyed from within. And I think a lot of my future podcasts, we're going to talk about that. Using the story itself as a jumping point. Not every week, but it's really getting old. This week we're going to talk about the White House visit. The Dodgers went to the White House today. It was a great time for all. Talk about the media and the narratives they consistently drive with the Eagles and with Riley Gaines speaking at Oklahoma State University. It's a mess out there, people. It's a mess. But before we get into it, I want to remind you to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us there. You can find this podcast, my other podcast. I do have political conservative podcasts there, both on California and national issues. And I also have a cultural podcast that's about entertainment in every way, shape, and form, from music, the movies, the gaming. I love gaming. And we have our libertarian podcast over there, as well as our regular non-political sports podcast. You can also find those, and in fact, you're probably watching this on either YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, or Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. So let's get down to it. So these are three cases I saw this past week where each case saw journalists. They were met with defiance from the sports leaders, from team owners and coaches. And it showed a stark contrast between the media's divisive agenda and sports' now enduring role as a unifying force. We're getting back to those basics where sports brings us together. And these clashes were all within days of each other. And it underscores a broader battle over the narrative control in America's pastime arenas, where tradition and achievements are they're pitted against ideological spin, against ideological beliefs, where they try to pit one against the other in one form of being good versus evil. Well, if there's good versus evil, the evil is coming from the progressive side that is trying to alienate specific voices in this country. So first up, the Dodgers in the White House, a columnist hypocrisy. So the Dodgers made it to the White House today, and there was a good old time, I guess. You saw Showtime with Trump taking a picture of him in the Oval Office. You could tell they were having a good time. Well, the LA Times columnist, Dylan Hernandez, he sat there and said, now granted, this came out last week. He said that he argued that the LA Dodgers, fresh off their, well, I wouldn't say fresh, but coming off their 2024 World Series trouncing of the hated pinstripes known as the Yankees, they should have rejected a White House invitation from Donald Trump. There, he said it aligns with hateful forces. Now, Dylan Hernandez is a Latino like I am, except he's a Latino who doesn't even probably know where his roots are. Americanized Latino, where I am Latino. Where are you from, brah? Mexico. What part of Mexico? Oh, no. Where are you from? HLA. I mean, I don't know Dylan Hernandez from any of that, but honest to God, that was a conversation I had with a progressive Latino once. And then I went on to go, habla español? I'm an American, man. And I speak English, you know? And I said, "So, you don't know where you're from in Mexico, but you're Latino. You don't speak, read, or write Spanish, but you're Latino. But because you're darker skinned than I am, you're more Latino than I am." And he was like, "Yeah, yeah." Well, he didn't say yeah, yeah, but that's kind of what he alluded at. And this guy that was an MMA fighter, and he'd been drinking. So I'm like, whoa, gotta play it cool here. Gotta play it cool, Dale. And so I sat there and said, "So, you don't speak, you don't read, you don't write Spanish, you don't know where your heritage or your history is from. You're from LA, but you are Latino before you're American." And he looked at me, and I looked at him, I go, and I started speaking in Spanish. I said, "Yo hablo español, escribo español, leo español. Yo soy Latino, panameño, puertorriqueño. Yo soy de donde yo soy." And he was dumbfounded. He did not. He just saw a white guy, which in and of itself, I reminded him, is racist because he assumed wrongly who and what I was. Well, this is what this Dylan Hernandez cat does. He's assuming all conservatives are white racist bigots. Why? It's easy. That's his whole industry. I come from the sports industry. I hired the Dylan Hernandezes of the world for 10 years. I paid them. Why? Well, I needed a reporter in each locker room for the NFL. And then we started branching out to baseball, but then I sold the business before then. But he's a hypocrite. He's your typical leftist sports beat reporter who thinks he knows best and thinks because he believes he's friends with these players, he's not, that he's aligned with them. These are one percenters. These are the one percenters of the one percenters, the MLB and NBA boy. These guys get paid guaranteed contracts. These guys have no clue what the ghetto or the barrio is anymore or the trailer parks. They left those lands many years ago. So this Dylan Hernandez is just an idiot. An idiot. Why do I say that? Well, you know, he championed the Dodgers' decision to honor the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. It's a group that mocks Christianity. He's demanding respect, honor. He wants Anglos to drop to their knees for minorities, and specifically him. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I believe based on what I've read about him in terms of his tone, what he writes about, etc. But he's okay with the mocking and disrespecting the Christianity. That makes him the scum of the earth. Not because he's mocking Christianity, because he has no respect for others. I will have a great conversation with a Democrat if they're willing to have a conversation. But if not, I will attack them as they attack me. As a former liberal, I grew up with Alinsky tactics. I can be just as mean, vile, and evil towards them. But I never go after them. I just react to them. And when I saw this Dylan Hernandez article, I was upset. Because he's just another Latino bigot. He's an embarrassment to my culture. Because he's not respecting other cultures. So to the team president, Stan Kasten, he did defend the visit that happened today because he saw it as a non-political tradition for champions. And he said every player was excited to attend. And some of them, it was fulfilling a lifelong dream. It's tied to sports glory. There was a time, yeah, we won. I get to go to the White House. Why? It's a once-in-a-million opportunity. These teams that say no, you're going to regret it, some of those players. You may have taken an idiotic stand and been lauded at the moment, but long term, you're going to wish you had gone. Yeah. So Hernandez insisted the visit was inherently political, normalizing Trump's rhetoric. So what is Trump's rhetoric? For the bottom 50% of Americans to have growing wages, to have their household wealth grow? Well, that happened his first term. But Dylan won't tell you that, will he? First time ever in my lifetime, maybe during Ronald Reagan's, but I can't even remember. That was so long ago and I was a child. You know, he pointed to L.A. County's strong anti-Trump voting record in past elections. And, you know, screw you, Dylan. You know, how are those same L.A. residents feeling with the L.A. wildfires and how bad that got because of the policies you support, Dylan Hernandez? The Dodgers went in 2021 under President Biden, and he was more polarizing and did more to hurt minorities than Trump ever did. Remember the vaccine mandates there, Dylan? How many times you've been jabbed? Let's hope you don't drop dead like others are for taking a jab that they thought would keep the COVID virus from catching it, and yet they still did. I got to be honest. Dylan, you need to focus on baseball, not politics. He wasn't the only one. The Eagles shutting down a reporter's bias. So there was a press exchange between the Eagles' Super Bowl victory and their between their last week. Learn how to talk, William. There was a reporter, you know, sat there and asked. I believe it was the owner. You know, and then remember, in 2017, 2018, after they won the Super Bowl, many of the Eagle players skipped the Trump White House visit because of political tensions, because everybody hated Trump despite the fact he was doing pretty good for the country. You know, and this time around, they said, we're going to go. So during a press conference, a journalist asked Lurie, yes, it was the team owner, if the upcoming visit might offend Eagles fans. What he's trying to say is, they don't like Trump, so you're going to offend them, man, so you should not go. And Lurie, you know, smartly dismissed the suggestion. And he just said, it's just an invitation from the White House. It's a cherished tradition, not a political statement. And again, some players saw it as a childhood dream after winning the Super Bowl. So, I think these responses back should be much harsher to stop and end it. But I'm happy at the fact that the tone is changing. They're saying, no, we are going to go. And Lurie did say, hey, some fans might disagree because they're too ignorant to understand what Trump did the first time around in lifting this country up, what he's doing right now. But he's doing the terrorist, William. He's doing the terrorist, William. Yeah, he is. Did you know he did terrorists in 2018 and the economy did not collapse? The world did not end? We have so many trade disparities. We have been the poster child for handouts to the world in the form of how much they tariff our products. But William, China only had 6-7%. Yeah, but they had laws, regulations, red tape, so bad that most companies could not get their products in. Japan too, India, Europe. They have all these regs. Why? To keep American products out, but yet we buy everything from the world, and Trump's ending that. And that will help the bottom 50%. And the people suffering those tariffs right now, my friends, they're the top 10%. 10% control 88% of the stock market. So that $1.2 trillion that's been lost, it's been mostly by the top 10%. So the bottom 50%, I think, is 0.04% or 0.07%. No, 0.04% of the stock market they're involved in. Most of it's through 401ks. But regardless, I'm digressing. You know, Lurie did stress it's a free country, and the visit's focus was celebrating the team's triumphant win. And I agree. It's not just the pros. It's collegiate level. Oklahoma softball, the coach, defender, players. So, and I found this on Twitchy, actually, online. This wasn't an article, so kudos to social media and X being the news source of the country. I'm not exaggerating. It actually is per surveys and polls. So, Twitchy reported on a post-game press conference with Oklahoma University women's softball team. And I guess they're a dominant force under Coach Patty Gasso. I'd say they are. My notes, 34-3. Woo, that is dominant. So after they won another game, a reporter pressed Gasso about several players attending the campus speech by Riley Gaines, who, I was just about to say something probably not nice, but I didn't mean it that way, so I'm glad I caught myself. But Riley Gaines is a former swimmer who advocates against transgender athletes in women's sports, and I do too. That's a big reason why I created, or I kept Points on the Board going. We couldn't find anybody to do the Points on the Board because we split off our football, then our basketball, and I said, I'm going to make this my political sports tie-in because I love doing that. It was just a matter that I had the time to do it, and I've made the time. But this transgender issue, it's just night and day. It's demeaning. Men are dominating, and people who say otherwise are just flat out lying. And you can see the anger. I'm sorry. You see some of these women out there, they're just nothing but shrews. They're saying, I am right, you are not. I mean, oh, really? Your opinion's right over everybody else's? Who made you God? She's saying, God ain't got nothing on me. I'm purer than Jesus ever thought he could be. Anyway, I'm digressing again. So, Riley Gaines is a former swimmer who advocates against transgender athletes in women's sports. And what the reporter was doing was implying that their attendance would create controversy, was angst, was not good. That was the underlying tone. And Gasso, she brushed it off. You know, in fact, she scoffed at it, you know, stating it was her players' personal right to attend any event they chose. She was refusing to let the reporter turn it into a gotcha moment. And that's what that reporter was trying to do. Like I said, I found this on social media, and social media erupted in praise. Fans, you know, were praising her, as I did. You know, no-nonsense defense of her team's autonomy. And as far as their softball team, 8 Women's College World Series titles. And I guess Gasso is a faith-driven leader. So she just, by nature, her natural inclination, probably has no issue with Riley Gaines and probably likes it. But she didn't sit there and support it. She sat there and said, it's their decision. And I support their decision. You see, the left always cries the darkness of democracy or the end of the democracy. Yet they're the ones who want to silence our voice. Why? Because I don't believe a man should be playing in a woman's sport. So they want to silence me. They want to beat me into submission. They want me on my knees, kissing their feet. No, it's not going to happen. Now, the reporter did face some backlash I saw on social media. Creepy virtue signaling. He was virtue signaling. Criticized for fixating on players' off-the-field choices rather than the fact you're supposed to be covering the on-the-field play. So these examples shows the media doing their best to inject divisive social issues into sports. Why? Because they're progressive leftists, and that's how their whole world revolves. Gasso sat there and put him in their place. Lurie put him in their place. The Dodgers team president put him in their place in a polite manner. I would not have been so polite. So across these incidents, mainstream media is consistently wielding sports as a platform to amplify their tribalism, their hate, and their targeting moments of triumph or personal freedom to attack. Hernandez imposed a political litmus test on the Dodgers' White House visit. He ignored the team's history of attending under both parties. And that showed more of his bias, more of his hateful, vile, evil ideology than anything else. The reporter's question to Lurie, he presupposed fan outrage. He said it may upset fans. He didn't know. He was projecting his hate of them going to Trump or to visit the White House under President Trump. Without any basis by assuming. And he could be right, but he just used that as a launching pad to be able to ask his question. He was looking to stir conflict where the team saw celebration. And in Oklahoma, the softball reporter, he sought to shame the players. He was looking to get the coach to shame them. Well, you know, I don't know. Gasso took the right stance and protected her players and their personal choice. Kasten, Lurie, and Gasso, they each reframe their situation as tradition for champions, a team honor, and players' rights. And they all three rejected the media's attempts to cast them as ideological pawns. And that's what you should do, my friends. We cannot buckle the knee to these people. I got to be honest. it's getting old. I shouldn't be talking about this every week where it's coming to an end. I'm talking about it every week because the reporters know they're losing. The left know they're losing. The Dan Wolkins, I can't think of their names, a couple of football, the Silvers, I can't remember the other one. There's like two or three of them. They're just horrible, vile people. White bread men living in the couches, fat couch potatoes, thinking they can champion every minority they come across. We don't need your help, brother. Stay your fat, white, pasty ass on that couch and let me determine what is right and wrong for myself. Idiota. So these are baseball, football, and softball stories, and they showcase the mainstream media's faltering grip, as I stated. Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Oklahoma. You would assume Oklahoma, but for LA and Philadelphia, that's a new one, and it shows we are winning. These teams are finally realizing they need to reject the mainstream media's bigotry playbook. NFL learned it with attendance. Their TV contracts fueled them, but attendance, that's like gravy, and they lost some of that. Baseball is a slowly dying sport. All right, let's get to one of the main features here. Mainstream media pushes division while women's sports fight for fairness. Same old, same old. But women are fighting back. Men are invading female sports, and they're dominating. And I'm glad. Abigail Wilson, disc golf. Last week at the MVP Music City Open in Nashville, a pro disc golfer, Abigail Wilson. I don't know if she heroically refused, but I guess she did in a way, because it could have cost her money. I'm assuming she probably gets paid for that, as sponsors, etc. But she refused to compete against biological male Natalie Ryan, who won it all. And you can see the difference. It's like golf on a green when they sling that frisbee. I saw it. I didn't realize it. I was like, holy mackerel. The power that the man has, if he's got good form, it's going to go much farther. The frisbee on their version of what I assume is the green. So she went up to go begin. She faked the throw and stated, quote, females must be protected in our division. This is unfair. I refuse to play, unquote, before leaving. And good for her. Good for her. And the problem is, there was a possibility she was going to be attacked, intimidated there, despite the fact that the organizers promised security, and it never materialized. And then she was attacked for calling Ryan him, which is what he is. It's a simple truth to us conservatives. And she was threatened with penalties. However, the DGPT backed off, affirming her right to protest. You know why they backed off? Because right now the court, this is like a, it's not even an 80-20. It's like an 85-15, 90-10. This isn't a hard decision. So these people backed off because the lawyer said the odds of us winning if she sues us are nil. Don't do anything. Then there was Stephanie Turner for fencing. On March 30th, 2025, at the Cherry Blossom Open in Maryland, fencer Stephanie Turner took a knee and forfeited against a biological male, Redmond Sullivan, rejecting USA Fencing's woke policy, letting men compete as women based on identity. Now, it's a reach, but if I'm correct, I'm looking at my notes over here, my side notes here. USA Fencing is affiliated with the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, which oversees Olympic sports in the U.S. And while USOPC itself does not receive ongoing federal funding, it has historically received specific federal grants for projects like military veteran programs. So they indirectly are attached to an organization that does receive some federal funding. My take is, if I'm the government, I go after them from that perspective. Just as in Maine, they are going after Maine because the public school policy, the high school association that runs high school, they're allowing boys to compete against girls still. But public schools get funding from federal funding. So the DOJ is going after them that way. And they'll win. That's just a matter of getting by the activist courts. But something needs to happen. This is disgraceful. She was disqualified with a black card when she chose not to play. And she was escorted out under protest. And good for her. She's given. See, that's heroic. The USA Fencing claims inclusivity, but conservatives, we see it as punishing women. This guy was like a subpar, fat fencer. Now he's dominating women. Then there's Ithaca College volleyball. The women's team forfeited against SUNY, so something New York, Cortland, rather than face a biological male. So what we're seeing here is a trend that's showing female athletes rejecting forced competition with males. I'm telling you, I wish a conservative coach who has a conservative basketball team of females to go recruit an ex-basketball player, sign them up for the semester, have them come on as a walk-on, and just start beating the hell out of the women to the point once they get to March Madness, they're in the finals. I bet you that would change rather quickly, America, those final 15%. Don Staley, who supports men in sports, would think twice. Don't you? Now, I don't have the story in front of me. I saw it before coming on the tape. In the women's pool championships, as in shooting pool championships, the women's pool championships of the world, the two finalists are men. That's right, men. You can't make this up. You can't make this up. Oh, real quick before I forget, Natalie Ryan. Who is Natalie Ryan? Natalie Ryan is the man who won the disc golf, they call it, the frisbee golf, I guess. Biological male, who's going through hormone therapy. He's got those man boobs looking kind of nasty. Because you look at him, you're like, you're a man with boobs. It just looks gross. No amount of therapy changes biology. So, let's move on to Leah Thomas. She spoke at the High Tops Trans Youth Forum. And she whined about World Aquatics' ban on men in elite women's events. She can't compete in the Olympics as a man. I mean, as a woman. She said, quote, I felt so devastated and felt grief. Oh, man. She feels that the person should decide if they want to play or not. She swam as a man, ranked with some like 450th, shattered all the female records. And this is who Riley Gaines lost to. That's what made her a champion. Will Thomas, because Will he's still a man. During that, all the time he was swimming, he was still sporting a dong. Whoosh, 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 whoosh in the locker room. In front of the girls. And they're showing him to be a victim when it's a travesty. The PDGA and USA Fencing, they're bending backwards to in favor of identity politics. They're letting biological males who tweak themselves taking hormone shots be allowed to play. Luckily, the World Aquatics Ban finally respects science, and conservatives, we demand that consistency in all sports for all women. See, for me, I look at it this way. Somebody once said, I can't remember, I was watching a podcast, it's so true. Michael knows. When they said, well, you don't care about this sport or that sport. And he said, you're right, I don't. And he's absolutely right. I don't care about disc golf. I don't care about female swimming. I don't care about female volleyball. Except for the outfits, it's pretty cool. I don't care about 90% of these sports. What I do care is about the abuse of women. And this is an abuse towards women. Women have been injured. This is unfair. This is un-American. This is just wrong. And that's what I care about. Is their rights, the same rights that I had, the same rights that God gave us. There's a reason. Since I was born, we've had men, women, boys, girls, range from bathrooms to sports leagues. Now, moving on, Title IX probes. Education and Justice Departments are rightly targeting Portland, Oregon, Neenah, Wisconsin, and RSU 52 for letting biological males into girls' sports. And they're violating Title IX's promise of fair competition. Title IX is supposed to protect women, not men saying they're women. In Portland, a male won the girls' high jump. In RSU 52, let me grab my notes here to tell you what. I'm laughing because when I do my notes, I do them shorthand, well, you know, concisely. In RSU 52, that's regarding the main school district that covers Turner, Leeds, and Green. And then there's Neenah, and that's another complaint of girls losing out. The point being for all of this is Trump, there's an order by Trump, an executive action. And this is, they're using this to investigate these schools not following it, and thus they are not going to receive federal funding. And I'm all for this. Again, Portland, Oregon, Neenah, Wisconsin, and Maine. Because they're letting biological males compete in girls' sports. So, and I hope they do investigate, and I hope they do get to the truth. Well, the truth is pretty obvious. You know, he's already removed $175 million to UPenn for letting Leah Thomas compete. So liberals cry, anti-trans, anti-trans. How about you form your own trans league? Form your own trans leagues. They actually tried that, I want to say, in Oregon. Or Washington State, one of those two, but nobody signed up, so it quickly disappeared. But you never heard about that in the news, did you? You know, these women are risking their careers who are standing up. You know, Wilson for the disc golf, her career may be shot. And she's battling the Leah Thomases of the world, crying victim, and she's just pushing for men to choose the women's sports, ignoring biology, because she just wants to win. They're losers as men, but winners as women. How bleeped up is that? The federal, you know, Trump's going on science and fairness while leftists cling to woke rules. You know, it's funny because I saw this coming even as a child, that every law that's created, another group would eventually use that law to advance their cause. And they would make it a stretch. You know, when I come from the fantasy sports industry, we fought hard for a carve out. I was part of the creation of a trade association. I was involved in that in the very beginning. Not directly. We were one of the 30 companies who were all chattering about creating one. And when we got the carve out, I knew eventually gamblers would figure out a way to use that carve out for fantasy sports. They don't have to now because of the Supreme Court ruling, but at the time they did. That's how life works. They've taken, all these groups have taken the civil rights movement and taking it for themselves. They've grifted off it. When you have the media helping you, it's a twofold battle. Because then the politicians jump in, because the media helps direct the politicians to what they're doing to the landscape. What I'm trying to say is the media creates a false narrative. People start to believe it. Politicians begin to fall in line because their constituents start to believe the lies the media tells them. So the media's obsession with painting fairness as bigotry, it buries the truth. Women's sports deserve protection from biological males, not forced inclusion. I, as a conservative, applaud these athletes. God bless every one of them, as well as the policies to uphold reality. And what are liberal outlets doing? They're doing nothing but fanning the flames of conflict. It's disgusting. Disgusting. All right, let's talk a little NASCAR. So the world of NASCAR has been rocked by a series of allegations from former drivers, including Casey Mears and Carl Edwards. And they're accusing the sport of manipulating race outcomes. They're saying they're doing it to boost excitement. Mears is where I found this information, and he talks about the 2005 season. But he also connects it all to a broader pattern of discontent. And it's voiced by other drivers, like Kevin Harvick and Christopher Bell. So obviously this is going to raise questions about NASCAR's integrity. So Casey Mears, he accuses the sport of rigging races, specifically citing instances from the 2005 season where he believes late cautions cost him victories. And I guess he talked about this on Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s podcast, the Dale Jr. Download. Hey, I like that. There was a time I knew all about NASCAR, not because I loved it, but because I lived in North Carolina. You can't help but the bleed over from the popularity of the sport. But he claims he was poised to win three races, the Texas, Atlanta, and Homestead. But late yellow flags kind of broke his lead or how it kind of changed the whole landscape of the race. He thought one of them was an intentional act by NASCAR to alter the outcome. I can see that. Dale Earnhardt Jr. supports Mears' perspective. He's noted a historical increase in caution flags aligning with new TV deals in the early 2000s. And he suggests this was a deliberate tactic to enhance the drama and viewer engagement. Carl Edwards accusations. Edwards is another former star accusing NASCAR of race manipulation. And he did that in a previous podcast. He claims there was a late caution in the 2016 championship race at Homestead. And he said it was done to make the race more exciting. And it cost him the title, and it contributed to his early retirement. Edwards stated, quote, "I know NASCAR was throwing these cautions to make it more exciting. That's a fact," unquote. And then he sat there and said, that's the reason Jimmy Johnson got the unexpected championship win. Before I go on, I got a lot of this information from Outkick. A bunch of articles on there. Outkick had a nicely well-done article. Kevin Harvick's perspective. Like I said, I got it from Outkick and other articles. Harvick, he's a former champion. He's big in the industry. And he's talked about NASCAR's influence over race outcomes. In 2018 interview, and I guess he had his own show called the Happy Hour Sirius XM show. He suggested that the debris cautions were sometimes questionable, particularly at super speedways like Talladega. And this isn't just Harvick, but it's a broader sentiment. Quote, "You see these debris cautions come out of nowhere, and you wonder who's calling that shot." Now, that's paraphrase. It's his overall skepticism. Christopher Bell's recent claims. Bell accused Chevrolet teams of race manipulation during the Martinsville playoff race. He stated, quote, "I could very clearly see the race manipulation and the race fixing that was going on. I believe cheating is the right word," unquote. He believes that that's what created and allowed Ryan Blaney to win. So they're talking about, or Bell at least, talking about driver and team collusion rather than NASCAR's direct intervention. But it adds to the overall narrative that NASCAR may be corrupt in its own way. NASCAR's never going to admit to rigging races. Something like this will have to be done from the Department of Justice to investigate. So stage racing, that was introduced recently, 2017. And that's cited as a modern evolution of manipulation. It structures excitement without relying on the late cautions. So in essence, okay, we're getting people's eyes are waking up to the late cautions. What can we do? Hey, let's create stage racing. The fans are always unsuspected. But when you have drivers talking about it, for decades, Mears, Edwards, Harvick, and Bell's claims, that leads to some great credence. So obviously there's longtime fans that have echoed this type of stuff. You always hear, here in every sport. Look at the Chiefs in football. But in NASCAR, they'll tell you which specific races where the outcomes look like they were orchestrated. Now, Mears and Edwards, they're not the only ones who share this frustration. Others just haven't spoken up. Zach Dean, quote, "Nothing gets my needle moving quite like some NASCAR conspiracies," unquote. He's like, y'all just be talking trash. Oh, man. Look, Casey Mears and Carl Edwards to Kevin Harvick and Christopher Bell. Now, these are allegations that weave what is probably a very complex tapestry of doubt about NASCAR's competitive purity. I have doubts about NBA's competitive purity, and I stopped watching when I saw, in my opinion, the refs give two straight playoff series to the Lakers over the Portland Trail Blazers over two seasons. The Trail Blazers were the best team in the league, and the refs gave them those games. That's my belief. So NASCAR does not shock me. So they say definitive proof remains elusive. It's hard to prove these. I think you can still take this, investigate it, and come to a conclusion, though, and put in contingencies to prevent it. Harvick's comments, it's not to one race, but his overall observations throughout his career. And Christopher Bell, he's got a specific race, his 2024 Martinsville accusation. It shifts focus from the team-level manipulation versus NASCAR directly. Brad Keselowski, Tony Stewart, they've been linked to aggressive racing or controversial finishes. Kyle Busch has also clashed with NASCAR over penalties. That's more officiating. I'm sure there's more out there, but that's what I came up with. I didn't do a super deep dive. But the bottom line is, something's fishy. We'll see, you got some explaining to do, but NASCAR never will. Conor McGregor, presidential bid, faces fierce opposition from Irish Parliament. So Conor McGregor, obviously everybody knows Conor McGregor is, even if you don't follow UFC, he's a renowned UFC fighter, turned political hopeful, former actor, I don't know if he's former actor, was in the updated Roadhouse, did a pretty good job there. Well, he's ignited a firestorm of criticism from Irish Parliament members. He wants to run for president in Ireland. He wants Ireland to be Irish. He doesn't want Ireland right now is being overrun with immigrants, and they're being protected by the government, and the Irish people are being shoved to the side. This is not up for dispute. This is pretty much factual. You can go over there and see it. It's documented. Politicians, and because he's talking about that, he's pushing to show that to the world. They're slamming it. They're saying it's rhetoric. They want him to be shut down. So it's an uphill battle for the nomination. It's a very polarized political climate, but never say never. Never say never. So members of the parliament, they're opposing him, obviously. Now, his whole campaign is based on populism. He wants to curb mass immigration. He wants more public safety. Irish are being attacked, raped, pillaged, murdered. And the Irish Parliament, the government, seems to be protecting them. He wants to reduce the overtaxation that's being done to the Irish to support all of these programs that don't help them. But all it's doing is encouraging more outsiders to come to Ireland. And this resonates with some voters. But not the political elite who don't have to live this life, who are protected in their gated communities with bodyguards, driven around. Now, they've united. At first, they thought it was a joke, but they see he's gaining traction. So they've united as a parliament. Now, he announced his intent or interest in running for president. It was late last year. So to run for president in Ireland, he must be at least 35 years old and nominated by either at least 20 members of the Irish Parliament. See, that's why they're uniting. And 60 senators. At least four of Ireland's 31 county or city councils. Well, he's 36. He's got the age. And he's an Irish citizenship, or is of Irish citizenship. So about 57% are probably, Okay, yeah, he's got 57% regarding the potential nomination. Some of his critiques are scathing, personal insults. That doesn't show there's a big wall of resistance. They won't say to his face, pow! So no parliamentarian surveyed expressed support. he has only the people's vote. So he's facing bigotry from Senator Garrett Ahern, who's probably, I'm not even going to get into it. Quote, I genuinely would struggle to think of anyone worse to hold that position, unquote. That's an elitist mentality. Elitist mentality. T.D. Meave O'Connell? These are all boozers in my eyes. Irish boozers with their mistresses living the high life, peeing on the people, and the people don't seem to care enough to vote him out. We'll see now, though, with McConnor talking about this. But T.D. Meave O'Connell labeled his divisive behavior and rhetoric as completely unsuitable. T.D. Duncan Smith, I could not think of anyone more unfit for public office. here's one that blows my mind. There's no evidence Mr. McGregor has the necessary skill set, another politician said. I got news for you. Politics is the one place where the dumbasses can get elected, and that's where a lot of elitists go. Because they can get elected, they don't have to actually work. Because they haven't created or built anything they've inherited, or they're working class who manage to be on their knees for somebody and work their way up. Somebody, there isn't a snowball's chance. Here's a senator who refused to go on the record. He's a moronic vulgarian. Another anonymous, misogynistic and a thug. Man, I would just create posters of these. My whole campaign would be on elite working class. Somebody called him a joke. So, you know, it's 134 parliamentarians were surveyed. None were in favor. Only 100 remained unpolled. So there's no way in hell. There's a lifeline, though. I guess there's something, the county council path. But they've been largely silent. Rural councils might be more receptive because they're more anti-establishment. And so he's a long shot. He's a damn long shot. But it's focused on immigration, which is a hot-button issue. That mirrors European and populist movements. And they're losing. I mean, hell, they're throwing a politician who's Le Pen, Marie Le Pen, into jail because she's got support on trumped-up charges. See, if I'm Trump, I would just break off all ties and negotiations as we do with third world countries that do this. Put sanctions on them as we have Venezuela for how they treated the people and their political enemies, the ruling classes, the Maduro. France is doing the same thing. We don't have the cojones to do that. We're too tied in with Europe. Europe's going down the wrong path. Europe is becoming the devil. The damn devil. They are not our friends. They want our money. That's it. They view us as bourgeois, as vulgar, as beneath them. And they're useless. We defend them. You know, he may have the people's support, but even that's divided. So I don't know how much support he has. So, and it's minimal so far from a March poll said 18% of the voters will consider him. So he's got a foundation. He's got to build on that. So he can get shellacked here. This is step one. He's just announced it. If he keeps going, he will build up support. And that's what he needs to do if he's serious about this. Understand, this cycle is about garnering support, getting your name out there, talking to issues, showing what's happening. So he's got to go from cage fighter to credible statesman. And he can do it. It's going to take more than one cycle. All right. The New Orleans Saints defensive tackle, Kalen Saunders. He's announced plans to host an LGBTQ-friendly football camp. Now, he made that during the 2025 GLAAD Media Awards and then announced it all over, and all the leftists, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Now, do I care about this? No, I don't care. My issue is this. When it comes to anything religion, the NFL spits on it. CBS, I remember Tim Tebow Super Bowl commercial, they denied it. Trump should still step in and give him a massive $50 million fine for that, for discrimination. I mean, this guy's just, God bless him, only he got enough talent to play in the NFL, but he's not like a big-time star or stud. Two-time Super Bowl champion from his time with the Chiefs, though. So God bless him. I'm not against it. I just hope that when something like this is announced for a Christian camp or something like that, the NFL is there to support it as well. I would do it right now if I was Tim Tebow. I would throw the NFL, put him in a corner and do it. To say, I dare you to say no to this. So I don't care about it. What I care is about how they discriminate against conservative principles. Now, Antonio Brown, he mocked Sanders. Cracker of the day goes to this guy dancing for GLAAD. See you soon, buddy. Oh, man. That's too funny. I got to be honest. Do what you want. I think he's doing this as a shtick. Unless he's a closet gay. Maybe that's it. I don't know. Maybe he's an open gay. He says he's LGBTQ friendly. Again, I don't care about the fact that he's doing this. I care more about the fact that the NFL has discriminated against religious type scenarios. Again, CBS, because that NFL stuff, then CBS said, no, you can allow that commercial. CBS would have allowed it because they negotiate with the NFL for television contracts. The NFL didn't. Anything when it comes to religious, the NFL has crapped on. Those are the main articles for today. Let's head on to the final whistle. Browns owner reflects on the Watson trade. I found this on FanSided and other sites. I found it on April 1st, so I didn't know if it was real or not. I asked the Blitz Boys when during their show about it. But Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns, has publicly acknowledged that the Deshaun Watson trade is a misstep. So to me, I'm like, holy mackerel, you still have this guy for 2 years. Haslam admitted the trade failed to deliver the expected off-field success. I think I could have told you that. Once you give a player like Watson the money, he's not going to perform. He's got his paycheck and he's cashing it. So, and I'm not talking about his off the dealership. I'm just talking about his performance on the field. But the real downside and the real meat of the story, what's Watson thinking? You know he saw those comments. He's going to quit on this team. I mean, he already quit. But any thought he may have had to coming back, it's probably done, over. I firmly believe his career's over. He may go to another team, get a tryout, then get cut. But I think overall his career's over. Final whistle number two. Pirates president addresses his Roberto Clemente logo removal. I am Puerto Rican as is Roberto Clemente. He's an icon in Puerto Rico. Pittsburgh Pirates president Travis Williams. So they removed Roberto Clemente's logo from the stadium to put an ad up. Now, fans are like, how dare you? The son who's probably done nothing in his life, living off daddy's legacy. You didn't talk to me, man. I don't care about this because Pittsburgh's a small market. If they were able to make money, put the sign out there and put a statue of Roberto Clemente, you know, at the ballpark. Because you know what's going to happen is when the next stadium is built or this team's bought by somebody, new ownership, they're just going to do a clean slate and then they're going to deal with the backlash that will happen for a few games. And that'll be it. And they'll put a paying sponsor out there. I mean, you got to be real about this. You know, I do believe they should have a bus or a statue of him. And in fact, let me double check my notes. I thought so. Yeah, they have a statue. So I'm like, get off your high horse. The team needs to make money in their small market. You want to know why they lose players? Great players? Because they don't have the money to keep him. Morons. I mean, this doesn't bother me enough, but I'm like, it's a business decision. They honor him with a 12-foot statue already. You know, it's like, my God. People just want to complain. And no, it did not diminish Roberto Clemente's legacy. His legacy was built over his play, and the statue honors it. Again, I'm not for or against this, but I'm like, look, it's a business. If they had a chance to make money, they're a small market team, they should take it. Social media targets Don Staley after championship loss. Boys, they got blown out. Excuse me. So South Carolina coach Don Staley, women's coach, made it to the finals again. She usually fields great teams, but she also believes that men can play in women's sports. Again, I like a team in the women's basketball to field two men, seven-footers, that can actually ball and just destroy the field. And if they're not allowed into the UNC or the March Madness for women, then sue them until they're in. Because if Don Staley says okay, I'm sure most people do. Anyway, she faced a barrage of online criticism following her team's embarrassing beatdown. It was like a varsity team beating on an eighth grade girls team playing for the first time. That's how bad it was. And the problem is it was her online, her antics during the game, her face. It was like she was just, be professional, Don. Be professional. She wasn't. Nelson was suited for some of her tactical decision. And I guess it was a chance to pile on somebody who's become a mean girl, who's become an idiot over the last couple of years over the political nonsense. She's always favored black female players over the white players, denigrating Connecticut's Paige Buechner and Caitlin Clark in so many words. She'll say one positive thing, then she'll say something very cutting to demean them. At least that's how it's come across at times. Here's one for the books. Dale Earnhardt Jr. faces legal clash with Lamar Jackson. So NASCAR icon, and he is an icon, Dale Earnhardt Jr., as his father was an icon. He's in an unexpected legal battle with Lamar Jackson, quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens, who, if you saw him anywhere, you probably wouldn't recognize him because he wears a helmet. So Lamar's arguing intellectual property rights. He alleges that Earnhardt's use of the term, the number 8, is tied to Lamar's brand. And we're like, what the hell? He was like a little kid in like junior high or grade school or something when Dale Earnhardt started using the number 8. Fans and analysts and lawyers, they're going, that's a bit of an overreach. Lamar supposedly this nice guy, but he's acting quite the moron here. Because I got to be honest, Earnhardt's a bit of an icon. Lamar isn't. Lamar's just a popular player in football. When the sport is done, he'll be forgotten. Not in a negative way, just like any other player. Patrick Mahomes won't be. Joe Montana isn't. Tom Brady isn't. These guys are champions, consistently winning. Lamar's seen as a loser, can't win a playoff game. And I'm not saying that to knock him. I'm saying, you know, you got to become something before you think you're something. Here's one. Football club's bizarre blunder over minute silence. So a Bulgarian football club, Arda Karzali, they held a minute silence for a player they thought was dead. He was presumed dead, only to discover he was still alive. So I guess there was some kind of miscommunication about the player's status, and it led to an awkward and unprecedented moment. I mean, can you believe that? I had to look at my notes here, my raw notes. They're on another computer here, but I got them in front of me. The player at the center of the Bulgarian football club, Arda Karzali, Karzals. So the player's name that was there was Petko Gonchev. He's a former striker for the team. And they held a minute silence to honor Gonchev. But players from both teams gathered at the center. And I guess as the stadium paid tribute to the 78-year-old club legend. I think they just thought he died of old age, somebody told him. But before the game even ended, somebody told him, no, he's alive. Oh, there was a social media post. Though that's a bit shaky. But they quickly realized your mistake, issued an apology on Facebook and during the match. The management of PFC Arda would like to express a huge apology to the former Arda player Petko Gonchev and his relatives after the club received wrong information about his death. We wish Petko Gonchev many more years of good health and to enjoy the success of Arda. Gonchev himself recounted the chaos of Bulgarian media, noting how he arrived home to a tearful wife and a flood of calls from his friends after the televised tribute, saying being buried alive is quite stressful, before pouring himself a brandy. That is hilarious. God bless you, Petko Gonchev, and many more years of life I hope you live. So a boxing match is halted after an unexpected twist. Here's another funny one. So a boxing bout was abruptly stopped when one fighter suffered a freak injury, leaving spectators and officials stunned in mid-fight. Hold on one second. I think I got my stories mixed up. I got to jump on my producer. This was the wrong story. The story that I was looking at, that I put on my notes, is it was a boxing fight was temporarily stopped after one of the fighters' mobile phone fell out of his trunks. Marvin Jones, why he had his phone in his trunks is beyond me. So he had the phone in his waistband, and it took just a few seconds in the first round for the fallout. So they gave it back to the corner, and the fight resumed, but it didn't get much better. This came from the Mirror. Out of the UK. Jones went on to be knocked out by his opponent. So he's only has 2 career wins and 5 losses. Come on, Marvin. You got to do better. All right. So Jay Morant did a gun gesture. Jay Morant's gun gesture sparks outrage. So he did a gun gesture to somebody and it drew a media backlash. And why? Because he was suspended for having a gun. He's trying to rebuild his image and does something dumb like that. I wasn't offended. I'm like, come on, we're really digging deep. But at the end of the day, I guess I can't argue it, but I'm like, come on, there's bigger things to worry about in NBA, and that's the quality of the game itself. All right, so we got a story here. Pat McCormick, golfer's extreme measures to stay composed. So Pat McCormick has gone down, I want to say from the PGA, I want to say Zorn League. He's just dropped from the PGA Tour to a lesser tour. And he's doing his best to bring himself back up. And he taped his mouth shut during the tournament to prevent an emotional outburst. And obviously having tape around your mouth caught everyone's attention. It's obviously unconventional. He's trying to maintain focus. He's trying to avert a meltdown. And golf can be intense. A lot of pressure's on it, especially when you're dropping from the money. You know, believe it or not, only a handful of golfers make the money. You see those, the top players, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of golfers on the losing end trying to make it. You know, think of the minors all through single A, double A, triple A. That's like golf, except the PGA itself is not as big as, say, other sports. But so God bless the kid for trying. Probably not the best way, but he's trying. Oh, man. And there you have it, my friends, the final whistle. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. We covered a lot. Look, this transgender issue, it's not going away, but we've got to keep fighting hard. This liberal bigotry of hating on conservatives, wanting to silence our voices, that's got to stop too. But all this stops if we keep fighting back, and we must keep fighting back, my friends. We must keep fighting back. I hope Conor McGregor can make some headway because his country's pretty much almost lost, as is the UK. So we shall see. And Lamar, I'm sorry, not, between you and Dale Earnhardt Jr., come on, grow up, son, grow up. I hope you enjoy the show. Do not forget, you can catch this show, or rather bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. Do not forget to like and share this show as well. And you can find this show at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora under the profile handle Grumblings Media. Until next week, I am William Del Pilar for Points on the Board, and I bid you adieu.